This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. You can subscribe to the app on Apple and Android. Visit FUBARradio.com for more details.
James Acaster on FUBAR Radio.
Ockerville River with title track, that song's called, which is fine if you know what the album's called. Our album's called The Stage Names. Good album. Marcus Bentley, hello.
Hi, James.
My guest today... which I'd normally say at the top, and I didn't today. Marcus Bentley, best known as the voice of Big Brother. Not of Big Brother, because that's other people, isn't it, really?
Yeah,
so you wouldn't be, you're not Big Brother yourself.
I'm the narrator of Big Brother, the day one in the Big Brother house and all that jazz.
Yeah, yeah. Do you often, do people often recognise your voice? Or?
I try and keep quiet on the streets, really, so I stick out, you know, I'm going through London, I stick out like a sore thumb if I see anything. But occasionally, yeah, I see something and people go, oh my God, you're that bloke. It's all, no, don't see anything.
It's more the intonation of it, really,
yeah,
isn't it?
It's rather a style, than isn't it? So, dear yes. one in the Big Brother house last night, some of the housemates, bloody blah.
Yeah, I mean, they do all sorts in that house. That's like,
we've been going 15 years, so they've
15
done all sorts,
years now.
Yeah.
And how long have you been doing it for 15 years?
Since the, yeah,
right from the start.
So since July the 12th or the 15th, I can't remember.
Wow,
2000. Yeah.
I mean, that's right from the beginning.
You got to
tell everyone what the Nasty Nick stuff you got to.
Yeah, that was amazing.
That was
time,
unfolding.
Nasty Nick. That was when it really sort of just went mental.
Yeah,
there was a famous DJ, she'll not be named, giving on the radio on one of the main BBC radios 50 ways to kill Nasty Nick.
Wow,
I don't think you could do that these days.
No, especially to a man who basically just smuggled in a pen and paper. Like, you know, yeah. I think.
That was the highlight of the series, basically why we're still here 15 years later.
But he's really been outdone by a lot of other reality TV villains.
We've progressed since then, haven't we?
You guys have really had a lot more villains on since.
We were talking about the other day, it was so massive and so different back then that you'd be going, and I'm not joking, you'd be going through Leicester Square and they'd have... on great big electronic screen, Big Brother. That night's Big Brother, which was in those days only about 20 minutes long.
Yeah.
And people would be gathered around. It was like something out of, 1984, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I think one of the main... I wouldn't say a bad guy in it, but I remember Victor...
Yeah, Victor's a good bloke, actually. He's really nice, but he's a bit of a... Yeah.
So you get to meet quite a few of them as well.
I've met Victor a few times. He's a really nice fella, you know. Sometimes I avoid them because when they first come out of the house, they're just on such a high, they can be quite sort of vain and...
Sure.
That's
what it would do, I guess. I mean, the whole thing is, let's see how people react.
And these are different days. Back in the day, I remember a housemate coming out and they were going in one of the big magazines where they take the photographs of whatever. And somebody said, do you know so-and-so? And this girl hadn't even won.
Right.
She said she's got a 250 grand deal for a photo shoot in so-and-so magazine.
Gosh.
That doesn't happen these days.
Does it not? No.
No, it doesn't, but, you know.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't know. I did Big Brother's Big Mouth once.
Yes.
Did
you present the show?
No, I wasn't. I was on
because
the panel.
When Russell Brand went off to be a superstar, they took on a load of. Like Michael McIntyre did a couple of weeks.
Oh, did he?
James Corden did a.
Yeah.
I think he did basically a Celebrity Big Brother, him and his sidekick, Alexa Chung, loads of famous people like that, you know.
No, so I was just on the panel of it was the last series. Yeah. I was on the panel of it, and I had a hard time fitting in, I'm not going to lie. I was with one of the members of Atomic Kitten and Denise from This Morning.
When they
asked me who was going to get evicted, I did say Nasty Nick, and one seemed to...
No.
No one was on board with that joke.
They had the guy, they used to have regularly the guy who was the creator of Viz, that Geordie
Simon McDonald.
He was a regular for years, and he was on this one with James Corden, was he presenting it, and James Corden said something like, who do you want to win? And he says, who gives a... And James was furious with him, and he was never on again. I don't think. Is it Simon?
Simon.
I don't think he's that bothered. But
he won't be bothered.
He won't be bothered.
I think you need someone on it that has. I think that there needs to be. What was nice about Russell Brand doing it was that he was kind of the voice of people who almost didn't like Big Brother, so he was kind of mocking the show, and making fun of it. And so it was actually quite fun to watch, even if you didn't like it, because even like if you didn't watch Big Brother, you could watch that show and see him just poking fun of it.
I would go far to see it, and this is my opinion. I think Russell Brand is a very funny man.
Like, yes.
But when he first started on that Big Mouth, I used to think,
right.
And I think he really sort of, dare I say, learned his craft, because it was live TV, an hour every night, you know, and he got really... And then I remember he'd been doing about a year, and he was like a different bloke, and I thought, oh my God, he is really talented, wow.
Yeah, that's where I first really heard about him. Yeah. And I know he'd been doing stuff before that. He'd been on MTV, he'd done the whole... dressing up as Osama bin Laden thing and all stuff like that, and got kicked off.
But I
didn't know him. I didn't know who that was. But like, it was on Big Brother's Big Mouth, because it was this thing where people started to say, you know, if you watch this, it's really funny and he's really good.
Yeah.
And so people who weren't watching Big Brother were watching that, because I think there was a. I remember an episode where someone had spilt wine in the garden and was drinking it out of the soil with a straw.
Yeah.
He was making fun of that, about going, if it's a food, it's all right, but not a liquid. if it's a food, it's 3 second rule. You can't do it when there's like, and it's just good fun of us to watch someone make fun of it a bit. But I thought I was going to make fun of it, but I didn't, because I got too
involved.
I just started realizing that I didn't think the target of my joke should be the people in the house.
Yeah.
I started feeling quite sorry for them.
Yeah.
And seeing the puppet masters as the villains. And I thought, I can't do that, because they're the ones booking me. So I can't say, you guys have kind of put them in a little room and jabbed them with sticks until they flip out. So I kind of feel like I should be making fun of you. Can I do that? They're like, no. Oh, okay.
What do I do?
I don't know what to do then. They on the episode that I had to talk about, they had showed one of the guys video footage of the people who nominated him.
Yeah.
And he
didn't like it.
He didn't like it. Well, of course he didn't. Who he thought he would.
Yeah.
He thought he'd be all right with it. But all of us do, in theory.
Yeah.
Because we've never, like...
Yeah.
I remember getting... before I ever got reviewed as a comic, I just thought, yeah, fine, you know, reviews, who cares? Sticks and stones. And then when you get a bad one and you go, oh, that's me. They're saying this is really shit. And that's me. And like, I think with him, he was like, they were like, do you want to see the people who nominated you? He's like, yeah, all right, anyway. And then you see his face just fall. And then one of them said sorry. And the first thing he did, call him a maggot.
Yeah.
Really, really went in at the deep end. Really did. Yeah. Is there anything that you can remember seeing on it that you've kind of been like, oh, that's...
Well,
that's ugly. You know?
Well... Ugly, yeah. There was going back, I mean, this going back, I can't, oh, when would this be? I'm guessing this would be Big Brother 6, which is approximately 10 years ago.
Wow.
I think. Yeah. And I will say, infamous young lady called Kinga.
I remember her.
And something with a bottle, and we should leave it there.
Yeah, yeah.
But I just we were talking about the other day. The series we've just done had, like, it was called... what was it called? Time Warp, or whatever it was called.
Yeah.
And there's flashbacks. We had some old housemates come in, quite a lot of them at times, and blah, blah, blah. And we were talking about, we were just getting nostalgic and talking about Kinga and thinking, now we're 10 years on, and maybe that girl will be at least maybe 32 now.
Yeah.
She may have children of her own, and you just think,
you
will Google your mother's name.
That is the first thing that comes up.
And that will be the first thing. You will be known forever.
She put Kinga Big Brother.
That's her real first name. So
there's not many
it's
others.
Unusual, you know, be
sharing that.
But
you probably don't need to put Kinga Big Brother. You could just put Kinga, and it would come up with.
Yeah, so that would be the sort of the most. And then a few years ago, you can't say a lot of these things on radio.
You can say anything on this, by the way.
Okay, great. So and one of the most personally distasteful things was going back about 4 years ago, and we'd just gone to Channel 4. And we had two housemates that had a wanking competition. That was pretty...
Really?
Yeah, that was pretty...
Oh, I don't remember that
vile.
One. I remember the Kinga thing. I didn't remember a wanking competition.
No. It was...
It's interesting, isn't it? Because like, that is...
A new law.
Because they say about it being a social experiment. And a lot of the time, I think, well, it's not a social experiment, is it? Because you know what's going to happen if you do this or if you do... But that kind of stuff, you go, no, you probably didn't predict that. You probably didn't predict that they'd have a wanking. That is interesting.
I think what happens is you get the go out and the audition and they look for the really look and search because you've got to get the right. You know, otherwise, you know, if you lose, you know, if the housemates are boring and you lose here 200,000 viewers because it's a bit tame or not really bothered, whatever. That's big. That's big news in on TV. So they've got to try and get right. But how you do it? So you get all these potential housemates that come and audition and go, "Hey, I'm crazy. I do this." And we had that for years. And I'd go, "Why have you? This person's so boring. Why have you fallen for it again?"
But
sometimes these people, what happens is they're there's often a practice before every year they do a thing called Guinea Pig Week, so they get all the cameras and everybody gets practice, and you know. And so they put sort of potential housemates in called guinea pigs. And sometimes these housemates are absolutely amazing TV fodder. But as soon as they know, so they've got great, we'll put them in the house. But as soon as they know that that is getting broadcast, they completely clam up and go. You know, because they don't want their grannies to see. Them getting up to mischief. So.
It's fascinating the people who do.
It's fascinating how they do it and how getting those right people. It's so difficult, you know.
Yeah,
you know. But what I was thinking is you get the right person. Sometimes it can, like, these people had the wanking competition. They were the real deal. There was this Geordie bloke called Jay McCrea, and he was sort of a guy who nearly got on Geordie's show but didn't, and he was like sort of on their sort of shortlist, but he came on our show.
I mean, that says a lot about the people who get on Geordie's show. That someone who does a wanking competition on live television doesn't get on.
Not extreme enough. And he boozed and he you know, and anyway, he found love in there and whatever. Oh, I don't know. But he was quite, you know, the real deal. Yes. He wasn't just pretending, he was the real deal, you know. Yeah. He wasn't just somebody showing off.
I think a lot of them have to be, really, because, like, you know, they are in there all the time. Yeah. I don't think you can keep it up for that long. You can't really keep up the act.
No, you see it on them. They come in and they go, "Hey, I'm crazy." They'll jump in the pool and then that'll be it. That'll be the highlight of their experience.
They jumped in the pool.
So that is it. That is the trick, getting the right cast and getting memorable housemates, like the Nikki Grahams of this year. I mean, do you remember Nikki Graham?
I do remember her.
Is she? That is who she is. She's exactly this person and fascinating, you know. Yes. We all want to meet. I see every year. So who would you like to put in the house, Marcus? Somebody would ask me, and I'll say, "Do you know what? I don't care. As long as I haven't met that person before, it's not somebody pretending to be a housemate of years gone by or just trying to put on a persona."
Yeah.
We want to meet, like in life, we want to meet interesting and real people and be entertained and fascinated and learn their story, you know. Well, surely.
For a lot of the time, the winners were people who were like, you hadn't had someone like that on it before a lot of the time. Like, you know, I think. When Brian won, there hadn't been a gay person on there before, had there?
We're going back, that would be 14 years ago.
A long time ago.
It was like, obviously, gay people were on TV and in starring roles of whatever, but it was sort of. He was probably on because he was funny and gay. Well, there's loads of funny and gay people. It seemed to be such a nuance to us.
It was really
all,
rare then.
It's mad, isn't it? It's mad. We don't
didn't
even
happen much.
He probably would never get on these days. He was a very funny bloke, but that came out in the show. And he was a gay, what's it called? A trolley dolly, you know.
Right, yes, he was, yes. Yeah.
And he was, but we learned about him, and he was a really lovely and fascinating bloke. But he probably was only on the show because he was gay. Which is mad. And 1 year on Channel 4, we had a man, I won't mention his name, but we had a man who was solely on there because he said, "I hate gays. I hate gays. Where I come from, we hate gays." Of course, there was a load of gay men in the Big Brother house and whatever. Now, even if someone said on Big Brother these days, "I hate gays.
Yeah.
Could you come to the diary room, please?" And he would be ejected from the house.
Really?
Yeah, because it's as bad as racism, you know, arguably, you know. But it's considered that.
Yes.
And they would be rightly kicked out, you know. But those days, he was put in there because that was his sort of thing. How was he going to react to... And he reacted really great, you know. He got on with it, you know, and he learned something.
He was a liar.
Stuff. I don't know. He was a liar. He was a bigot and liar.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's mad. It would just never happen these days.
Yeah, but obviously there was a whole Shilpa Shetty thing, wasn't there? So I guess that... Was that the turning point for that kind of stuff, do you think?
Yeah, because... it was just it's just strange. I mean, even now, I find it difficult to talk about.
Yeah.
Because it was such an important thing that it was like, you can't see anything. You can't see anything.
Yeah.
I had, like... They picked me up in a Merc every day, and I had one ever since, because there was death threats in Bombay. The Prime Minister was Gordon Brown, I think he was, anyway.
Yeah.
And he was out in India doing something. He was getting asked on the streets, and they were burning effigies of the Big Brother producers from the lampposts in Bombay or wherever. And there was, I remember going
in. Quite impressive that they went for the producers.
Yeah, there was just,
yeah.
It is quite impressive.
That shows some know how.
Yeah.
And then they were worried
for my safety. It was just unbelievable. But it was like, you just can't see anything, because I think they were caught on the hop. I can't even remember. I was going to say they got found guilty of certain things.
Yeah.
But there was a big investigation by Ofcom, whatever. I can't even remember the results, but it was big, big stuff. And it did change. It did change how we, we would deal with things in a similar way, because not long after that, there was a girl on the what we call the civilian Big Brother, who was trying to be a little bit straight, and she was with a black girl.
Yeah.
And there's certain things you cannot see in the radio, but she used the N-word, but in streets. But she was a white girl,
right? Yeah.
And she was trying to be cool with this black girl on there. And everyone just looked at her, because obviously it was like, you do not say anything, racist. And she was just using it in a sort of a Quentin Tarantino way, hey man.
Sure.
My homies type of thing, but with the N-word.
Yeah.
And she got immediately rejected, and the producers were really gutted, because she was a great housemate, but there's just no.
It's weird, isn't it? Because obviously I disagree with using that word in any context, including the one she did. But I reckon for that show, when it's a social experiment, and that's the way it's being presented.
But you can't because, I mean,
I think I think as an experiment, keep her in and see how it plays out with her. I definitely agreed when people, I remember when there was that big fight, the Victor thing, and they sent people in, just because he was going to potentially hit a woman in the face.
Yeah.
So they sent in people to break it up, and that's when they should definitely intervene. Yeah. But I think when someone makes a horrendous faux pas or does something that is offensive to the other people that they're living in close proximity with, I think just keep them in, because for a TV show.
But I do think that, I think this is the thing with the social experiment that was supposedly where it started. People see it to me all the time. Oh, Marcus, it's gone so far from what it used to be. And I see, do you know what happened in the first week of Big Brother? All the housemates, this is the first Big Brother ever. All the housemates took all their clothes off.
Yep.
They had a mud bath and rolled around the garden, whatever they were doing. They were doing some clear sort of sculpture.
Yeah.
And they all had a naked shower together.
Great.
And that was in the first week of Big Brother, so whatever. That's the type of thing that goes on now.
Yeah.
We've come such a long way since then. And I'm losing my train of thought. I'm desperately trying to cling back to what I was saying. We're talking about the social experiment.
Yeah.
And I've forgotten, James, what I'm talking about.
That's all right, mate.
Waffling away.
This is the longest opening chat we've ever had.
Yeah. Have we got any music?
We are here to talk about music. We're putting our iPods on shuffle. I'll put mine on first.
You put yours on first.
And then we'll go on to yours next. So let's see what my one throws up first. So here we go. Track one. I'm here with Marcus Bentley. That is Flipper. No prizes for guessing what the song's called. That's from their album Generic Flipper. Good album. That song, well, good as an album, I'd say. Individual tracks, a little bit hard going, but that's the.
What genre would you see that? That to me, that's some sort of hardcore punk, but is it not?
Kind of punky indie music. Yeah, it's I'd say indie punk, maybe, or punky indie. But it's a good. Good little, it's a fun little cult album, that is. That's what that is.
Eclectic.
Yeah. Marcus, I was going to ask you as well, we'll get on to music in a minute. Actually, what kind of music do you have on your iPod? Are you...
Well, my favourite band ever is R.E.M.
Lovely.
They're my favourite band ever. Stuff. And I went to see them, when I was a kid, 84. That was the first time. My mate didn't know. It was the Newcastle Ballroom. And my mate really liked them.
Yeah.
And he took us and we went and I didn't know what to expect. And this bloke came on stage who was Michael Stipe.
Yeah.
And he had a skinhead.
Yeah.
And he had a hoodie, which was a ripped pocket hanging off, and black Dr. Martens. and he just, I thought he was a roadie, and he just started singing a little weird ditty, and yeah. then the band came on, and wow, blew me away. And then we saw them. That I think I worked out once. We saw that was about the October, and then we saw them at Manchester Ballroom in the March.
Yeah,
when the Fables of the Reconstruction album came out, and this time he had white peroxide hair, spiky, and he had a velvet smoking jacket on.
Lovely.
It was amazing. And this ball in Manchester had sprung floor, and the whole of it was boom. But it was amazing. So that was one of my favourite gigs I've ever been to. So I love R.E.M.
That's great. Were going to see R.E.M. before most people knew who R.E.M. were.
I remember I'd been at drama school in about 1990, I think. And they had a really famous album called Out of Time.
Yes.
And that was the album that was really mega.
Yeah.
And I was in a drama. It was in this posh street. I was a mate having a cup of coffee, and this really sort of middle class woman and her kids came in, and it was LPs and probably cassettes and the odd CD in those days, and she had an R.E.M. Out of Time album there, and it. Yeah. I was gutted.
I was
gutted.
It's hard, isn't it?
And then they went mega, about 95, they went absolutely mega with Automatic for the People and then Monster. They had this tour with where they were supported by Radiohead, all over world tour. And after that, they slowly fell back into being a cult band again, even though with a mega sort of contract with Warner Brothers. But still, they weren't on everyone's other, a bit like
albums,
you know,
like Up and stuff.
Yeah.
Are a bit more, you know.
Great tunes, and some of those tunes, if they'd released them earlier in their careers, they would have been as famous as Man on the Moon or whatever now. But
I think my two favourite R.E.M. albums are New Adventures in Hi-Fi.
That's one of my favourites.
And
yeah.
Up.
Yeah.
I think those two are the ones I really love.
So they're my favourites, but I love bands like the Pixies and and I've got a bit of hardcore on here myself, like people like Minor Threat. I love the Beastie Boys.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about if I could choose one of my songs, I'd choose a Beastie Boy track.
Yeah.
And I remember, I don't cry, but I remember he died the year, one of the members, and it was Coldplay were in concert.
Yeah.
And I don't particularly like Coldplay. I think they're great, but there's not something I'd play. And he sang, Chris Martin.
Yeah.
Live on stage. The Beastie Boy died that day.
Yeah.
Adam Yauch, as he called.
Yeah.
He died that day, and he sang at the piano in a slow, sort of really mournful lilt.
Yeah.
You've got to fight for your right to party. And it brought a lump to my throat. Such a lovely sort of thing.
Yeah,
because they were amazing, When they first started, I remember they were just the brats, weren't they? Almost like a comic band, and then they became such a sort of a highly acclaimed...
But they were one of the first bands, the reason why we have parental advisory stickers on stuff. They were one of the first ones that people
Was it License to Ill, their album?
Something like that, I think it might have been that one, where it's like people we need to warn people about this before they buy it, because there was so much naughty stuff.
20 years ago.
Yeah, well, it would have been
years
more.
Ago,
I think that would have been very long.
1985, can't do my maths. Yeah,
yeah, it would have been a long time ago.
Yeah, so, and I love the Pixies and like a bit of Killing Joke and a bit of... I was a bit young for all that when it all first came out, but... And my mate, I remember going to drama school, my mate was even younger than me, and I'd say, how on earth are you into these things? Because I was too young for these things like The Damned and the Sex Pistols and whatever, but you just loved them and...
people
the Smiths, I guess that was when I was sort of, early teenagers, the Smiths and, brilliant bands like that. But there's brilliant bands in every era, isn't there? And but I was just thinking the other day when Glastonbury on and The Who came on, I like a bit of Who, but you think, why can't... And I went to see the Stone... I'd never been to one of these... because I worked all these years in the summer doing Big Brother.
Yeah.
Doing Big Brother, I've never been to places like Glastonbury. I've never been to a festival. But the nearest I got to was about 2 years ago. My wife and I, we went to, very naively, we went to see the Stone Roses in Finsbury Park.
Right, yeah.
And my wife was going, what are those? What are they throwing? Why are they throwing their lager? And these like £7 a pint, why are they throwing their lager? Yeah. I go, it's not effing lager.
Yeah.
And we crammed in. It was an absolutely amazing gig. And it was just like putting the record on, but they were so tight. They were unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah.
And we saw Rudimental that day. And we'd never heard of Rudimental. Who are they? And they're amazing. Stone Roses. And so I think if we ever went to a festival type thing again, we'd have to do it sort of in a posh way.
Yeah, well, festivals we'd have are to tough. Get,
yeah, I just
I'm not sure.
I'm too
I'm
old
really,
for that now, you know.
Yeah.
Getting pee thrown over me and, you know.
Well, there's a big... I do a lot of festivals now doing stand-up, and you turn up and there's a massive... just hole in the age range of people there. So it's literally everyone up to the age of about 17, 18, and then nobody for ages until, like, people are probably 40-year-olds.
Yeah.
So, like, there's just no one in their 20s and 30s.
Really?
Wow. And then, like, maybe, like, one or two people.
Yeah.
And then, like, and then there's, like, parents. So it goes from kids to parents.
Yeah.
And everything in between is just, like, not... It's not there. It's... apart from, like, you know, actually... That's not true. If you go somewhere like Latitude, it'll be different. But like for a lot of the smaller festivals all around the country, there's just this massive hole. But then, like, you know, all the ones you've heard of, Reading, Leeds and Glastonbury, are mainly people in their 20s and 30s.
I wonder why. Is that because sort of the so-called calibre of the main headline acts?
Yeah, it might be. I think that some of the bigger festivals, people go for the bands and for see the acts. And the smaller ones, people go because they love festivals.
Yeah.
And I think the kind of people who just love the atmosphere of a festival and being there are parents and kids. I mean, it's not really people in their 20s and 30s don't just want to walk around and go, oh, we'll sit here for a bit and have a peppermint tea and some churros. And then we'll go and we'll watch a dub. A nice little dub band from Africa, and we'll watch them, even though we don't know who they are, but we'll watch them. Oh, this is nice, and it's raining a bit, doesn't matter. And then we'll go and oh, there's an osteopath tent, we'll go there, get my back looked at, you know. Whereas, like,
I've got to go to an osteopath. I've got a few weeks off now before I start Celebrity Big Brother, and so I think I'm going to maybe it's a little mini festival somewhere where I can go home plenty, maybe in the evening.
Got a Green Man in Wales. That's quite a nice mixture of the two. That's got good bands.
I don't fancy in the travelling.
No.
Is anything in Kent?
I'm not sure, actually. I think there is.
They used to have one called Lounge on the Farm.
I did that once. Lounge on the Farm.
I might see if that's still going. Or is there a Hop Farm one or something?
Not sure. Yeah, I think there probably is.
Maybe after, you know.
I was interested in what you were saying earlier about REM getting big and then going back. Like, during those years where they were massive, it was out of time and automatic for the people and stuff, did you go off them a bit, or did you go into them even more?
I even went through this mad stage of, like, especially when E-Beer came out.
Yeah.
Getting on there and getting really obscure pieces of, like, memorabilia, not obscure, but, like, really rare records and posters and things.
Yeah.
Which, I've got, I don't know what on earth I'm going to do with them. So, but no, I didn't. But But you could really, when it got to about New Adventures in Hi-Fi, which is an amazing album, as we said, and then I could feel it all retracting a little bit. And, you know, and then you'd go and see them. And of course, they were, you know, probably in their late 50s now, so when most artists getting towards 40, whatever, it's getting a little bit uncool, whatever, you know. I don't know.
But the good thing about them, and the rare thing, I think, is that they kept on doing exactly what they wanted with each album. So even the albums that were massive weren't them trying to be a massive band.
Yeah.
It was just doing what they want each time, and it would slightly change a bit. And, like, my dad's a big REM fan. Yeah. My mum hates them, and my mum's reason for hating them is that all their songs sound the same, which is not true.
No.
You know, with each album, I think the sound changes and matures. And I think they had this thing where I read one of their autobiographies where they said, we're going to quit when we don't enjoy it anymore.
Yeah. And
I think they just got to a point where they went, oh, we're done now. And they let go of it quite easily. And the drummer left after New Adventures in Hi-Fi.
I used to be in the fan club, I just remembered. You got a Christmas... It was something ridiculous, £6 or £9 a year, that's all it was.
Right.
And you would get a really rare record, and these records are worth hundreds of pounds for Christmas every year. You'd get, like, stickers and...
Lovely.
T-shirts, maybe, and, you know. So it was a really, really good deal. So they really, like, looked after their fans and that.
Have you got a favourite song of theirs that you would have... I mean, maybe funeral song, but it's a bit extreme, isn't it?
There's a song on, it might be Out of Time, I don't know, and it's called Country Feedback.
Yeah, it's that song Out of Time.
I remember reading about it as well, is that he does it. It's a lot of, you know, like the Smiths, the hardcore Smiths fans, there's a song, isn't there, that they all think is the best song.
And what
is it?
There's a Light That Never Goes Out.
That's the one.
Yeah.
And with the REM fans, it's this country feedback.
Yes.
And he basically, what it is, it's a stream of, it's a bit of a stream of consciousness of words, yeah, whatever, towards the end, whatever. But he, I read about it, and he did it in one take.
Right.
Whatever effect he was trying to get, as he was saying the words, the stream of consciousness, I think it's about him splitting up with a lover or whatever, and he in the studio, he apparently was backing off the mic or whatever and shouting, yeah, these words, and he fell down the stairs towards the end. He fell down some steps, probably, you know. But, you know.
Yeah.
And that is the one take, and you can just feel that sort of,
yeah,
you know, because sometimes, if anything, with the very heavily produced some of the later REM albums, but that on this really mega, mega selling album,
yeah,
is just really raw, and yeah, and I think it's just beautiful.
I think that's why New Adventures in Hi-Fi is, yeah, nice, because a lot of those are live.
Yeah.
Live I think in dressing rooms, in sound checks. They,
yeah,
recorded,
that's,
a lot,
I think,
of
they
that.
Recorded it, yeah, because they were on the road with Monster.
Yeah.
And that's quite a grungy LP. It was sort of at the height of, what's he called? Kurt Cobain and all that.
Yes.
So that was the sort of the height. So, and I remember Courtney Love saying that was her and Kurt's, or maybe that's not true, actually. When was... Because I remember reading that, it was her favourite record anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
But I remember reading that on the in his CD player, when they found Kurt Cobain, he was playing New Adventures. He was
Monster.
Playing Automatic for the People.
Oh, Automatic for the People. Okay.
I think I'm trying to tell a tale and I can't even remember it. But,
yeah, yeah. I like when bands, because obviously grunge was quite big, and I like when, like, I think REM and Neil Young.
Yeah.
You can really tell, if you just look for their discography, when, yeah, it was that grunge came in,
yeah, cause
and
he
they
did it with the
embraced it.
Pearl Jam as well, didn't he?
He did, yeah, he did Mirrorball.
And I like them as well. I like,
yeah,
them.
Yeah, yeah. I think Mirrorball was Mirrorball wasn't received very well. A lot of people don't like it. I think it's very good.
I was playing that only the other day.
Yeah. Ah, there you go. Well, yeah. There's a hope it comes up. Yeah. Do you want to pass your
book here?
Pass your thing over. We will see what it throws up. I'd love it if after all that chat, it now just like throws up.
There you go. You can't operate that on, because that's on
Bananarama. Oh, lovely. Look at this. Just finding the...
I hope it doesn't put anything. I hope it's something cool.
I mean, yeah. I really hope it's something cool. You've had such a... You've made it sound quite cool already. I'm trying to see where the...
The shuffle is. No, I don't.
No, I'm not trying to see. I'm trying to see where I can plug this in, actually.
So what I've got is a really good case, which is waterproof.
Oh, look at that. He just... Marcus Bentley just...
Do you know what? This might not
undid
work.
It like a flask.
I might need to take this case off, which is, you might have to use yours.
Okay, we'll put another one of mine on.
Because I think...
then we'll come to...
I need to get my adapter, which is in my bag. So I'm going to leave the room.
Okay.
Put this fancy case. And
Marcus is being called to the diary room. He'll come back when he's... so that means we get another one of mine, which, as you all know, I'm delighted about. I mean, obviously I've got no problem with it. Let's see what's next on my one. Here we go. Oh, this is a horrible track. It's 7 minutes long by Nervous Cop, and it is just... I'm going to play a little bit of this. This is literally what the song is.
You were talking to me, that my lad was asking me about... Dad.
That is 7 minutes, that song that I was just playing there. It's horrible. We'll skip to the next one and see how this sounds instead. Right, I mean, there's officially a problem with my iPod, because I tell you what's happening. This week, that's been happening with my iPod, and I've been thinking it was the headphones, and I need to get new headphones. But it's just happened then on the plug there, so that means my iPod, which half the programme depends on, is slowly breaking. So that means we couldn't play Joanna Gruesome just then. But the good news is, on this show, which has suddenly gone from quite an easy show to everything going wrong, but it means now I have to go on to Marcus's iPod, which is good. I'm looking at it. I can't see how you put this on shuffle, Marcus.
I don't use shuffle, so...
You don't use it?
Wait, let's have a look.
That means I've got to get a new iPod, which is really annoying, because this is like a 160 gig one.
You get it mended. It'll be the headphone socket.
Yeah, let's get it mended. That'll be alright. Hope we can get it mended.
Where's the shuffle? It has gone all wrong, hasn't it? We should have rehearsed.
That's gone absolutely wrong. I mean,
Let's just play a song.
Sure. Sure, why not? That's cheap. We should play country feedback, really.
Don't play now.
It's playing. You turn the volume up. You're listening to FUBAR.
Is it going out?
The song is called Frank Sinatra. Who's the band?
Cake.
Lovely. And you said you heard that on The Sopranos.
Yeah, I think it was at the beginning or the end, but I imagine it was a fat Tony Soprano walking down the paper to get down the drive to get his paper.
Yeah, you can imagine him walking along to that looking pretty tough.
Yeah.
It was nice. I'm trying to think now of a lot of... I'd like to make a playlist of songs that are named after other musicians as well. Buddy Holly by Weezer, that would be one that was on there. So I think LCD Sound System did Daft Punk Is Playing at My House. That was a big one.
Well,
I think you can make a whole album based on that kind of stuff.
You got me thinking.
You just kind of... it's quite hard, isn't it, when you start properly thinking about it. But I'm sure we could think of sure we could think of more. But that's nice, man. Are you a big Sopranos fan?
I love The Sopranos.
See, I've never seen it.
Well, do you know what? Quite a few lads have said that to me lately. And I thought you got to watch it. You know.
Yeah.
All those references you miss in GMs. You know.
Yeah.
Do you know what? That probably finished 10 years ago, didn't it?
Yeah, it would have finished a long time ago.
Yeah.
But there's so many. Who's got time to watch all of the?
Yeah, you've got to watch that as classic.
The box sets. But that one is one of the ones where you kind of think, yeah, I should.
Mind you, it is pretty violent and it's, you know.
I like that kind of stuff. I like a bit of violence.
You know.
Well, yesterday I watched The Purge. Have you ever seen that?
No.
I don't know why I watched The Purge. I've got Netflix and I'm going through it. There's so many options of things that I could watch. And I watched The Purge, which had been given 1 star. But I thought, yeah, I've always heard of The Purge and I think it's an interesting idea that it's in a future where there's one night a year where everything's legal. You can do whatever you like.
All crime is legal. I saw that advertised on a bus stop last year.
Yeah, and so you're allowed to kill people if you want, and just what people would do. And I thought I'd watch that. It really depressed me.
Did it deserve more than 1 star?
Yeah, maybe 2 stars, but I'll probably double the star rating.
Yeah.
But from what I gather, because there's been a lot of sequels, and I think a lot of the sequels have... with the Alien films, where the first Alien film was actually almost a play. It's amazing. Yeah. It's very good. Uh-huh. And then the second one is also very good, but it's just them going, we'll take the Alien and we'll just make it all about... Imagine if there was loads of them and just the action movie with that. And just take the core idea of imagine if there was an Alien and we'll do that loads.
Yeah.
And I think The Purge, they've kind of gone with the first one. They've gone imagine this future, but here's the storyline we're going to do. And it's going to be about the family and their how that they've got to weigh up what they believe in and their morals and stuff and all this. And I think the sequels to The Purge have just gone, no, just imagine if everyone was allowed to kill each other. And so they just do that for the sequels and stuff. So
that sounds nasty.
I watched the one where they're trying to do it a little bit nicer.
Yeah.
But it's still pretty old. I mean, Ethan Hawke's in it. That's the only thing that swung me. I was like, well, Ethan Hawke wouldn't do something that's completely rubbish.
You haven't
surely
saw it at the AGMs. No.
No, yeah, no, I don't think you should watch it. That's the kind of violence that depresses me.
Yeah, well, I've started watching that Peaky Blinders. I'm always a little bit behind the times. Now, we're on the wife and I were watching the first series. We're about episode 3. It's really, really good.
I'm being told it's really, really good. I was reading about it today. That's on Netflix. I should just watch Peaky Blinders. I started watching Bloodline today. I don't know why. Everyone's told me not to watch it, but I really like the two leads.
Yeah.
I love the two lead actors.
You're your own man.
Do you know what? I am, actually. I think that this show should be about me being my own man.
Yeah.
Put it out there. I watch what I like. I don't necessarily
that
like
could
the
could be the title of your series, your Channel 4 series.
So my Channel 4 series
He's
coming out.
He's his own man.
He's his own man. And it's me doing stuff that the viewers hate.
Yeah.
This is rubbish, but he's his own. I mean, you knew what you were getting.
Yeah.
He's his own man. He does what he likes.
Absolutely.
Would you, so if you, I mean, before you did Big Brother,
what did you do in my life?
What's the history?
I was an actor. I've been, you know, went to drama school.
Yeah.
I did, in the 90s, I did loads of, like, I as an actor, yeah. I was in loads of commercials.
Right.
I remember doing about 9 commercials, which yeah. appeared really well in the midnight. You know, when you're sort yeah. of just out of drama school and, like, you've done a bit of fringe theatre, then you yep. do a bit of, bit of rep in those days. I remember going, yeah. You know, and I was dead chuffed to be getting £150 a week, which is great.
Yeah.
That was the equity minimum.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, get 9 commercials and think, oh my God. Yeah. Oh great. And then I did some, I turn up a casting.
Yeah.
For 18 months, I'd get every single one of them. Every yeah. one I went for.
Yeah.
And then I went for one.
Yeah.
And I never got another commercial ever again.
Wow.
So this 18, this this what do they call, there's a phrase for anybody, yeah. these golden days of yeah, 18 yeah. months of, like, well, I've got another yeah. one, and then nothing, until I did one last year
right.
with Peter Dixon, the guy off of The X Factor.
Yeah. Lovely.
Tonight!
Yes.
Yeah, and we had a great laugh.
And
we
did, and was it based on that kind of stuff?
Me and him were sort of going around doing these voiceovers for this. Anyway, it was for a big newspaper, and they were doing this reality TV list, and we were, you know,
yeah.
we did this joint commercial, and we had a great big yellow Hummer, and we were travelling around in our posh dinner suits and what have you, going to events. And yeah. blah de blah. Anyway, it was funny to see us out of context and together.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
And so that, but that was the first commercial I'd done in what would be 18 years or something like that.
Yeah.
So it was just, you know.
I'd like to see a programme where it's you and Peter Dixon just doing yeah. voiceovers yeah. of various things. So literally,
Peter
like a duel.
Making a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
Tonight, Marcus!
Oh, that would be great. You two doing the voiceover of each other's lives.
Yeah.
So I'd make a documentary about you. Yeah. A documentary
on
about
this
Peter.
Channel 4 programme of yours, your man, we could do a little sketch, you know.
Yeah.
A little sketch insert.
I'd like
know.
To do that. I'd yeah. like to make a documentary about either one of both of you and then have you do the voice.
We need to pitch
each
this
one.
Don't we, to one of the big channels.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'd watch that.
Yeah,
I'd watch it.
I'd watch it too.
When you auditioned for Big Brother, was there a lot of people who just all sounded like you, or was it loads of different voices?
No. I think what it was, I'd started doing voiceovers in 1998, so 2 years before Big Brother started, and I was basically, as I said, I'd come to this hiatus where I was doing nowt.
Yeah.
I was doing a bit of theatre, a bit of this and that, but my work had dried up.
Yeah.
So, right, I need a new agent. So I basically got contacts, the directory for agents and the business.
Yeah.
And I went through the agents and I randomly, did I even email? Was it email in those days? Probably was.
Yeah.
1998, I can't quite
remember. Yeah.
I probably wrote
yeah,
and I said, look, I'm looking for new representation, and yeah. the letter must have arrived on this desk, and I'd accidentally wrote away to the biggest voiceover agency at the time in the country.
Yeah.
And they rang me up that day because it was 1998, and it yeah. was around the it was just before the World Cup, and Gazza, who never went to the World Cup in the end,
yes,
because of some controversy,
yeah,
they wanted to do whatever advert it was, they wanted whoever to do an impersonation of Paul Gascoigne. Now, they like a lot of people think that you know, I don't know, they think that just because you're from the Northeast, you can do that's yeah. just a general sort of
yes.
sort of thing. Because I remember on a little sidestep when the great Bobby Robson
yeah.
got sacked from Newcastle United, whenever that was,
yeah.
That one of the newspapers was saying, hey, what's he going to do now? He could do Anton Deck's job. He could be the yeah. voice of Big Brother. And well, how yeah, disrespectful yeah, yeah. of Bobby yeah. Robson, really.
Yes,
just because yeah. he's from the Northeast,
yeah.
any Geordie's job is his.
Yeah. Disrespectful, you know, to you as well,
yeah,
let's
well,
face it.
You know, I'd like to think so.
Bobby Robson could step in.
So anyway, going back to the so I did yeah. this advert for, I can't even remember what it was for. I think yeah. it was from a museum.
Right.
It was something like the Natural History Museum. It was something like that in London. Being Paul Gascoigne,
yeah.
and it had a World Cup edge to it, sort of
right,
thing.
Right, yeah, know? Yeah.
And that was it, and I've never sort of looked. So when it came to sort of the producers of Big Brother looking for a voice to voice this show
yeah.
that nobody'd really heard of. There was rumblings in the paper because it had been big in Holland and
yeah.
it came from a
yes.
Dutch company.
Yeah.
Endemol
yeah.
is a Dutch company, and it came from there. They'd done it to great success, and so Channel 4 bought it, and so they wanted a voice for it to narrate the show, and they So they just got every, when all these big voiceovers, and so I was with a big voiceover agent accidentally, and they got all the tapes. They weren't even on CDs in those days. Right, like nowadays, it would all be just some sort of MP3 or whatever sent to them. They listened to all these people, so there'd be famous people, because on my agent's book, there was loads of famous people, and just listen to everybody. So I think, we'll have a group of famous people, a group of regional types.
Yeah.
And I was in that sort of section. Mm-hmm. And then I got this phone call, and I just bought this, which were a mini disc player, but you could record on it. And my agent rang me up and said, "Look, you need a bit of script. They're quite like you for this job. Would you just, you know, and you've been shortlisted. Would you do a bit of script?"
Yeah.
I thought so. We drove to one of the electrical store, and we got this £8 mic.
Yeah.
And we stuck it in the whatever. I say we because my wife drew, remember, and so I had to record this bit of script, and it's typical Big Brother fare. It was things like Johnny's in the bathroom doing something he wouldn't want his mother to know type thing. And so and so's in the garden feeding the chickens, and apparently it was that line that got me the gig.
The chickens the line.
Channel 4 commission editor loved the way I said the word chickens. So, you know. So I suppose like anything, when you get a job, there's always you tickle someone's fancy in some way.
Sure,
I like the way his eyebrows move and that, you know, close up, whatever. I don't know who knows. And so that's how I got the gig.
Yeah.
And I remember turning up the first day. We were reminiscing about the other day, and normally you go and do a voiceover and it'll be half an hour, if that, you know. Mm. You got a couple of lines, you get it right, you go home.
Yeah.
My first day on Big Brother, I was there for 14 hours with the producer standing over me who wanted me to do the show.
Yeah.
So when you saw, it's too Geordie, can you do a bit more RP, a bit more sort of posh?
Yeah.
So, no, slower. And that was like the whole thing. And I absolutely hated it. And when I listen to it now, people go, "Oh, you don't sound like you used to do, Marcus. What's all that about?" And it's like, really is. It's slow delivery. And we used to see everything. We'd name it, check everybody in a room.
Yeah.
And we'd talk about what they were doing. So we'd actually comment on what they did last night. Oh, actually, he didn't do that. He said that type of thing. Blah, blah, blah. Anyway, it was completely different. And when the next show we did for Big Brother was the Comic Relief. We did Comic Relief. The first Celebrity Big Brother was for Comic Relief, and Jack D won it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was actually on the BBC and Channel 4.
Yeah, okay.
So it was just really weird times, and I thought, this is for Comic Relief. It's supposed to be funny. I can't do this. And so then I think it was at that point I started developing my style. But I was listening to something the other day from which Big Brother 10 or 11, which is the last one on Channel 4 about 5 years ago, and the whole show, even then, it was slow, so slow.
Right,
it was slow
the
way we did it. We've moved on such a lot. Like in TV, like in anything, you've got to move on. You can't be doing it in TV. You can't be doing the same things that you were doing 10 years ago. So it's a lot sort of faster and crisper these days.
Yeah. And of course, Jack D escaped.
He did, yeah.
Legend. Great. And and went back because he got bored. Was that that right?
Yeah.
He didn't have anything to do, so he went back in the house.
I think Lenny Henry had sort of cajoled him and doing it, said, "You do it, you know. We need a big name in here, you know. We're gonna, because this is for Comic Relief, you've got to do it." So, I think he was shamed into going back in as well. I think, if I remember rightly, but it was great fun. And do you know, it was only on 7 days, you know,
was it?
Yeah,
is that it? And then
Big Brother, Celebrity Big Brother 2, which had people like Les Dennis, Goldie, and Ann Diamond in it. I thought, I think it was a bit of a I loved it, but I don't think it was that popular. And the news had it that the people at Channel 4 said, "Oh, I think we'll just stick to the normal Big Brother." Of course, but these days, you know, the Celebrity Big Brother is like
people love
a lot bigger than the normal Big Brother. You know,
who was in it? Who's in the last Celebrity Big Brother? Because I remember people talking about it.
We're doing 2 years now, so it's sort of So who was in it last year? I forget. Gosh, who was in it?
Most recent one, there was someone on it who
was Callum Best was in the last one. Mm. I've gone blank, you know. But we've had, over the years, we've had people like
Katie Hopkins was on it.
Katie Hopkins, yes.
So that's what people were saying.
She was
our
controversial character. You know.
People were saying that she came across all right on it.
Yeah, because we had.
Is that true? Amanda watched it. She never comes across well. No, of course she doesn't. I mean, she's an awful person. But someone was saying to me, "Oh, she's all right. She came across okay." But I don't know. I didn't watch it.
Yeah, I think that she came across nicer than expected.
Yeah. She's a vile, isn't she? there you go. She is, but she'll be she'll be massive because like people, that's what it is now, isn't it? People people know you put her on.
Yeah, I was just thinking of sort of what was he called? The famous northern fat comedian who's
Bernard Manning.
Bernard Manning. She's like sort of a modern day Bernard Manning.
This is the weird thing,
without the jokes.
This morning, I had to do a thing for a Talking Heads show where I had to watch TV from the past, and they showed me a clip of Bernard Manning on the Mrs. Merton show, where she's saying to him, "You're a racist, aren't you?"
Oh my goodness!
And he's just going, "Yeah, yeah, I am." And just talking, and he's going, "Some people I like, some people I don't," and doing all this, and it's not nice. But at the same time, you go back then. You know, there wasn't a thing of like, right, we're gonna be controversial or we're gonna offend people. Yeah. It was just literally a guy going on a show, her asking about it, him not trying to court controversy, and just him just saying, "Yeah, here's how I feel," and you can make up your mind about it one way or the other. And Richard Wilson was on the sofa as well and was challenging him about it, and that was that. Whereas the Katie Hopkins thing is crazy, because the difference there is that Katie Hopkins has a team of people behind her, especially a big PR team, and the whole idea behind it is, look, you're only going to be famous if you say something offensive and upsetting to people.
You can earn a lot of money. You can get your kitchen built this year
if
you say that you don't like fat handicapped people or whatever.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, if you say that everyone on the boat should be killed, then you will get, we can do something. But, you know, Bernard Manning had a comedy career to fall back on and could do that and go went on the side. And yeah, he did say offensive jokes and stuff as well, but like he had a career and stuff to do, and you can make up your mind if you liked him, if you didn't. But now, I mean, I think it's with Twitter and stuff as well. Now they've got all this stuff online. If you say something like that, everyone starts talking about you.
Yeah.
Also, the papers, obviously the worst, because the papers will put you on the front page if you say something. I mean, going back to the Shilpa Shetty thing, you know, that was all over the front page. There's a massive deal made about it. It was a huge thing. And if that happened now, I think, with social media being as big as it is, the backlash would have been even more.
Yeah, absolutely.
Great.
Yeah.
It would have been humongous. But, like, Katie Hopkins definitely... I don't think really means a lot of the stuff she's saying, and I don't think the team behind her believe it. I don't think any of them really stop for a second and think, "Oh, these are real people we might be properly, upsetting." But also, they're real people that we might be encouraging to hate other people.
I don't.
And
God
knows what.
I personally don't think it's real, and that I'm sure.
Yeah,
Bernard Manning was genuine in his vile thoughts that he maybe put into comedy, so-called comedy, but I think she makes some of it up. I really do. Trying to get controversy.
Well, with him,
that's just so insincere.
With Bernard Manning, like when he was on that Mrs. Merton show, he didn't at any point go, "I think we should all be killed."
Yeah,
he'd never say anything like that. Yeah. Like she had said to him, "Do you think we should kill them all?"
Yeah.
He would have gone, "No, I just don't like him," because he's just an old racist who hasn't really thought about it, and like he makes these jokes because it's pretty lazy to do a racist joke. It's it's a stereotype. You just make the joke, and people who don't want to think beyond that laugh at it, and it's a shame. But he's not going like, "I hate them." It's not hate. It's just like he's just not thought it through. It's just, born in a different time. But with her, you go, where's this hatred coming? There's a hatred here.
Yeah.
There's a hatred in the people who like you. And there's something they're unhappy with in their life somewhere, and it has to go somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So they aim it at people who are different. But it's Manning. Yeah, I don't think... I heard a good story about Bernard Manning that made me respect him as a comic, which a lot of comedians would say that as a comic... In terms of like timing and stuff, he was very good. It's just that we just don't agree with a lot of his content, and wouldn't want to say
it
ourselves.
Well, it's like that Chubby Brown these days, isn't it? Some of his stuff is really, really vile.
Yeah, horrible.
He's probably a really funny man as
well. Yeah, good performer,
tells
funny bones.
Horrible joke. Yeah. It's such a
With great power comes great responsibility. If you're able to work a room really well, no matter what you say, because you've got brilliant timing and performance
just
skills.
Talent, isn't it? Yeah. It doesn't mean you're a great person.
Then you've got to follow it up with what you say. But Bernard Manning apparently did a gig in a... And I quite like the story. I think this is funny. But he did a gig in the church. He was booked to do a charity gig in the church, a fundraiser, because they'd had their stereo nicked.
Yeah.
And before he went on, they said to him, right, three things you can't say. Don't mention religion, don't swear, and don't mention the stereo bin next because people are still upset about it. And he walked on stage in front of it was all the congregation, and there was a life-size crucifix behind him with a life-size Jesus on it, and his opening line was pointing at the Jesus and going, "I see they caught the cunt who stole the stereo." That's how he started his gig. I think that's funny. I think that's a good opening line. I don't support his racist opinions. I think we should have another song from your...
Okay.
Now, because we can't put yours on shuffle, I think because we've talked about it already, it'd be quite good to put country feedback on if we can find it.
Let's see if I can
find it. Nice, especially after we've talked about it. And then we could probably... I think for the rest of the show, we will do stuff from your iPod and we will choose... I mean, it's going against the spirit of the show, but do you know what? When one of our iPods breaks or the other one, we can't figure out how to shuffle it. We've got to improvise.
Right, I've got it. Here we go.
Great.
FUBAR Radio.
REM, Country Feedback. Pleasure to play that song. I think that might be my favourite REM song as well. I think...
Do you know they as a band, I know they've retired now.
Yes.
But the song that they would never play live was, what's it called?
Shiny Happy People.
Because they couldn't stand it, you know.
Yeah,
I think it's quite a good song.
I like it. I think it's nice.
Yeah, and it's got the B-52. It's a famous, and it was on, they did it on Sesame Street or something like that.
Oh, did they? That's probably what it was.
Shiny, I think it's
a nice song.
Yeah.
B-52 singers on it. They came from the same place.
Athens, Georgia.
Athens, Georgia. And they were friends with a lot of people, weren't they? I think Black Flag they were friends with.
Cause I've got a bit of Black Flag on there, I think, as well.
Have you?
Yeah.
Lovely. Because I think Henry Rollins has a story about when REM got their first gold album. God, reckon it, and he was in the kitchen with Stipe. And that's how he talks about it. So it's like, I was in the kitchen with Stipe. So he got a phone call, and he's on the record label, and then he's saying, "Yeah, thanks, goodbye." And then turned to everyone and went, "How much is a gold record? How many do you have to sell for?" He didn't even know. He was just like, "How many have we sold?" It's like, I don't know. And then the other them know, and they're like, "Oh, we better ask someone."
Yeah.
So I haven't got any concept of what I've just achieved. I don't know what that means because that was never the plan.
Yeah.
Just nice to it, and I think. I don't know about you, but I always think when I was younger, I'm 30 now, but like when I was like a teenager, I think I had my whole life planned out. And I think that stops you from doing something really creative. I remember reading an autobiography about REM and how it wasn't really intentionally we're going to be this huge band. It definitely wasn't going to be a stadium band. It was just people playing for fun.
Yeah.
And then it all just started rolling on for that.
His dad was in the army, American army, US army, and he was over in Germany and traveling a lot. And I don't imagine him being quite lonely. He has a beloved sister, and he was a massive Patti Smith fan. And you know, so she's on that.
That might be my favourite REM song, actually. Ebo the Letter.
Yeah, that's beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah,
and
really
she's
nice.
On that, of course, isn't she?
She's very good.
She's amazing, isn't she?
Have you got Horses? Have you got that on your...
Yeah, I think I have. The other one, the one with Because the Night.
Oh, I don't know. I've just got
Easter.
Horses.
That's
where my
good,
knowledge
of
Patti Smith runs out. It's Horses and Ebo the Letter, and then that's it.
Yeah, because she wrote that, you know, Because the night belongs to lovers. She wrote it with Springsteen.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah.
Lovely stuff.
Which is mega.
REM, massive fans of Springsteen. I think Mike Mills, Springsteen's one of his favourites, isn't he? He loves Springsteen and the Beach Boys. I saw the Brian Wilson film this week. The Brian Wilson biopic, Love and Mercy. Very good. Paul Dano is excellent in it as Brian Wilson, as a young Brian Wilson.
Right.
Really good. Do you know much about the Beach Boys? Are you a Beach Boys fan?
No, I just used to sort of... when would it be? Sort of the 80s and 90s when you'd read about Brian Wilson being this sort of... I imagine him to be some sort of LSD or whatever, drug-addled brain. And
that was when he was in bed,
whatever, for years, getting incredibly fat. And you say, oh, my God, you know.
Yes.
Oh, my God. And, you know, everyone's... had his copy of Pet Sounds somewhere, you know. I've heard those amazingly, you know, amazing pop songs. And
Well, it's an amazing story with him that he was, you know, he was very much like fighting a one-man battle with, you know, music-wise, it wasn't really supported by his band much. They didn't really. Yeah. Mike Love, especially, was a singer, didn't really believe in him and was naysaying Pet Sounds. And then Pet Sounds, we all think that it was massive, but it wasn't. It did well in England, but it didn't really do well in the States. And so when he was then trying to make an album called Smile, which was like meant to be a response to Sgt. Pepper's and try and be better than Sgt. Pepper, it gets more naysaying.
It
and
got shelved,
eventually
it?
Like, had a breakdown.
For years,
yeah.
did it?
Oh, for like 36 years or something.
It came out the last few years.
It came out in like 2004 or something like that.
What's it like?
It's brilliant. But like, it's brilliant, but you listen to it and go, oh, if this had come out when it was meant to, it would have been incredible. You know, like, it's so good now, and it's a really good album. But you just know that if they had actually let him do what he wanted to do back then, it would have had that sound, that 60s sound to it.
Is it, like,
it
got a concept
so
to it?
Yeah, it's a story about someone traveling from, I think it might be the wrong way around, but Plymouth Rock to Hawaii, I think it's that way around. It's about someone doing a journey from there, and it's got songs like Good Vibrations is on it, and stuff like that. So, you know, quite big songs that were released on their own or on, you know, other albums after, you know, he kind of moved away from the band.
I was talking about concept albums. I listened on my iPod the other day, and I'd never done it before. I just had individual songs before. It was the entire Ogden's Nut Gone Flake, the Small Faces album.
Right, yeah.
Which has got all that is it Stanley Unwin gobbledygook?
Oh, yeah.
I can't do it, but, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And some amazing songs linked together with this fantastical sort of story. It's so hippie.
Yeah,
at
the same time,
it's been rocky and mod-like. It's just what a crazy, crazy album. You think, what were they smoking?
But it's nice to, I mean, to be honest, I was going to say, like, you know, that was, it's nice that music like that existed then. We don't have much of it now, but we have loads of it now. It's just that, you know, people don't know about it, or people, you know, it's not in the mainstream, but like,
it's getting out there and listening and getting musicians getting their music heard, you know.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, so it's worth, I mean, Brian Wilson's story is incredible, how, you know, he had just years of just laying in bed and doing nothing, and then, you know, he had a psychiatrist who basically controlled him and kept him a bit of a prisoner.
Was he a drug casualty? Was that originally some sort
he
of
he was
psychosis?
Already kind of like having like hearing voices and stuff before he did LSD and stuff,
right.
But like he started doing LSD when
he was prone to some issues with his health, and then he took some drugs made it
and also remember that was before people really knew how bad
some of these
effects were, so people were just doing it, you know, so like you just get scared because sometimes you think, you know, there's loads of stuff people are doing. You know, it's like vaping and stuff. You go, oh, hope that's all right. hope we're all okay, because a lot of people are doing it. We don't know.
Yeah.
But actually, in a lot of ways, it's like the internet. A lot of people are saying now, you know, I mean, there's a lot of studies have come out now that are like, oh, actually, here's the stuff that's affected our brains now that we've been on, that we spend so much time online doing this. And like, you know, I mean, anyone... someone was telling me about a study that had been done about watching pornography on the internet and about how some people will be on there for like hours or whatever, and that what it does is it floods your brain with dopamine and then just basically, if you know, leads to depression. And you know, but people just for the first however many years when we all just had the internet, everyone was like, I can see boobs whatever I like, and didn't know what the result was going to be.
And it's free.
Yeah, but now, you know, as well, I mean, there's that thing of like, I this week, or well, within the last couple of weeks, I've kind of not been going online as much. I've got rid of all the games on my phone and stuff like that, and
play games because it just zaps your time away, doesn't it?
Yeah,
they're too good.
But I just noticed how, like,
you know
suddenly, so I think the reason why I was doing it is because I just realised I wasn't using my brain a lot to remember things or anything like that, because, like, you know, so much of it is on your phone, things like that, and I'm just forgetting.
I remember my own phone number, but that's all. I don't remember my kids or my wife.
I wouldn't know it.
Someone said to
me, what's David Trent's phone number, who I text pretty much every day. I wouldn't know. I haven't got a clue. And you know, sometimes, you know, just you arrive somewhere, you got to walk somewhere, just get the maps out on your phone, find out how to get there. And I just, you know, I don't know. Also, we've had very hot weather.
We had an earthquake. I live in Broadstairs in Kent, right?
Yeah.
We had an earthquake about 6 weeks ago.
Right.
what's the first thing you do? We walk up to the top of the morning, you go, you pick your phone up,
Twitter.
And I go straight on Twitter because the news ain't going to have it.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're praying somebody else.
Yeah.
And it all just comes alive.
I love it for that.
And I love the honesty as well because, and the fact that people can take photographs of whatever. Yeah, it's intrusive, I know.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
That ship's sailed, you know. So these people that do naughty things can get caught a lot easier, hopefully. But I love it.
Also, it's good that people can get caught as long as they're getting caught by the right people, right?
Yeah.
Like, if we all suddenly become judge, jury, and executioner.
Oh, I hate all that, don't you? We were talking about the Katie Hopkins things.
Yeah.
I was reading an article about something the other day, and it was God bless Nick Cave, great musician. He lost his son last week, didn't he?
Oh, did he?
And he's 15, and he's tumbled down a cliff in his hometown of Brighton, and poor lad got killed.
Oh, right.
And somebody in one of the major papers had made a great big sort of... case that his dad had shown in violent movies. They don't know why this kid got killed. It was an accident. They don't know anything about it. It hasn't been released, but he did. So this guy in a really highbrow paper was putting this case out there. But I read an article about this article because a lot of people were doing that.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, sack the journalist. Sack them all. You know, there should be this sort of what's it called? You know, hung, drawn and quartered jury thing. You know, get him out. And we've become a lot of that, you know.
People
have opinions. We've just had the general election, and it was like, oh my God, you know, if anyone's voting, whatever, they're off my page, whatever, you know. And this thing, I got people on my Facebook, you know, friends, acquaintances, who were so left wing. Now, my politics are fairly sort of middle of the left wing, whatever, but they're so left wing. Anything, it doesn't matter what the Conservatives do, whatever, it's bad, evil, evil, evil.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It doesn't work like that. Whereas everything's a great big melting pot of God knows what, and you just got to, you know, choose what's important for you, in my opinion.
Yeah.
You know, it isn't all bad, you know, and it is. It's, oh, that's it. I'm never going to speak to you again. How dare you? You know?
Yeah. People are going to end up just with their little social media and just surrounded by people that are saying what they want to hear.
You do well. I do that on Twitter. I must admit, because
bubbles.
You know, on Big Brother, you get a lot of people. Oh, what a load of all. Whatever. And do you know what? Quite frankly, I don't want to hear it. So
Of course.
Block. Whatever. Don't want to hear it. So you do end up sort of. You just want to get through because I do 13 weeks. I do about 20 weeks of Big Brother every year. I don't want negativity around. I don't need it. There's enough sort of, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I know what Big Brother's about. I love it a bit. It's my livelihood, and I've got loads of friends at work on it, and you end up with this. But it's like in life, you end up choosing in general. People that you choose your friends because usually they've got similar interests and similar beliefs to you. Otherwise, it would be, you know, you don't get on with them, do you?
I wonder, actually, have you noticed a difference in how the... Because obviously when you started Big Brother, 15 years ago, did you say?
Yeah.
When you started that, you know, there was none of this, no social media and stuff like that, and people weren't on their phones all the time. But now you're putting people in the Big Brother house who probably, for most of their time, they're on their phones... normally in the outside world and stuff like that, and then all that goes away. Have you noticed any sort of difference in how they behave when that's suddenly taken away?
No, I don't think so. I mean, back in when Big Brother first started, they were each allowed to take a novel in. Of course, it was usually 10 housemates, so 10 novels would go in.
Right.
So then the producers suddenly realised after a couple of series, we're not getting much out of them because they're all reading, you know.
Right, yeah, of course.
They weren't allowed to bring the novels in or whatever.
No more novels.
You know. So I think a lot of people probably watched a lot more TV in those years. I mean, we all do it these days. We watch our favourite programmes, like Big Brother, whatever, and you've got your phone in your hand and tweeting about Facebook and about it. That's how we do it. And, you know, it's changed, hasn't it? And... I don't watch Coronation Street, but I guess the guys who are watching Coronation Street are doing the same. Oh my goodness, this has happened, and it's part of the fun. I don't know. I think it's healthy not to do it too much. But you know, I use my phone for everything these days.
Sure.
I have one of those iPad things, and I never use it these days.
Right, okay.
Everything is on that phone. You know, you know, my news. I don't buy newspapers these days because you can find everything out on the websites and things like that.
Yeah. That's why I started getting worried about my memory. Today, I basically burnt a sofa because I didn't switch the hairdryer off properly. Could have set the whole house on fire. I didn't need to do that. You know, I left my shopping in the self-service checkout and just went home.
It's your memory.
I was like, oh, I'm not thinking. Also, it's been really hot. I mean, I'm blaming it on the weather as well. I'm really tired.
You've got a lot to think about, haven't you? You've got your Edinburgh show coming.
So much to do.
You've got a lot of things running around your brain.
I'm in a long-distance relationship. There's so much pressure on me all the time.
That must be difficult.
It's all right.
Do you do Skype and things?
Yeah, she's moving here now.
Yeah. See, that's how good I am at smooching. I've been married for 18 years, right? So we were talking the other day, my wife and I, is that we didn't really have, I think the most we had back in there was texts, maybe.
Yeah.
We were texting a little bit, but we didn't have all the social media phone in your pocket. There was mobiles, but they were expensive. They were 40p a minute to use. We were in call boxes but Skype, oh my goodness, that must be amazing. At the same time, you can't do anything, can you? You can get tracked on your phone. Your girlfriend's going to know where you are. You can't go, oh God, I can't be bothered
If someone sent you a message you can't bother to reply to it straight away, but you do a tweet and then you're up. They'll be seeing that. Now they know.
And people know that you're on Facebook.
They know it. So
because there's that
reply.
Little green light on the side, isn't there? He's awake. Don't do that on Twitter. But
also, you get text now. You send a text and it says seen underneath it.
Oh, yeah.
So you know they've seen it.
You have to answer.
Seen it. What are they doing?
Yeah, why aren't they answering me?
They're doing just walking around. Yeah. They know that I've sent that and they've just looked at it and gone, meh. Then walked away.
Yeah, I sometimes get on Twitter from Big Brother fans. Why haven't you answered? Why haven't you?
Everyone's so angry.
Yeah, angry.
Everyone's so angry. But that's why. Yeah. So I have read so many more newspapers and stuff.
Doing a lot of podcasts. I've heard about these podcast things.
Yes.
And I've been going on, and I've learnt some things. Great. About murderers in America that I'd never heard of.
That's great.
I'm really into these murders, I'm afraid.
Well, I don't even apologise for it. I think that's most of us.
And you think, oh my goodness, I am sort of going, oh, what's the latest? And you hear some sort of getting into some sort of entertainment out of something so horrible and gruesome. Something so,
And there's a bit of
shame.
Stuff like cereal, stuff like that.
That's where I started.
That's what you're.
And you're going, this lad. Yeah. At the end of it, you're none the wiser, really. What do you think about
it? I didn't listen to it.
I'd be interested.
Right.
But you're just thinking.
I watched something called The Staircase. I watched that. It was a documentary, and that was quite similar. It's a true crime kind of
thing. Yeah, I love it.
It was, that was quite depressing.
But I worked but out. I had watched something like 12 or 13, listened to 12 or 13 hours.
Yeah.
Of this stuff, doing a lot of commuting, going to the studios, doing Big Brother. We think, oh my goodness, and I was none the wiser by the end of it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, maybe you could crack a case with yourself one day.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Is it training for?
Yeah. My friend who's an editor on Big Brother, she's just started doing this online university course for forensic science.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You do an online course for that?
Apparently.
Mental.
Yeah. Well,
that's good.
She gets a qualification at the end of it. So not quite a degree, but something or other.
Yeah.
And she's really studying for it and everything.
That's pretty cool. She'll be in CSI soon.
Yeah.
I think, excuse me, choosing tracks from your iPod, can we play Redondo Beach by Patti Smith? Because we talked about that.
All right, let's have a look.
I mean, that's probably my favourite song on that album, I'd say. Some people might disagree. I like that one myself. First heard it when Morrissey covered it, actually. That's where I first came across that song.
All right, here we go.
Cool. Patti Smith, Redondo Beach. Lovely song. About someone going missing, actually. We were talking about true crime and stuff. That is about someone... it's about... someone she was with... Well, I don't think it's autobiographical. But someone she was with... getting found washed up on Redondo Beach.
Jolly little tune as well, isn't it?
It's lovely, jolly. Feels really nice and jaunty. And then you listen to the lyrics, go, oh yeah, she's talking about someone committing suicide. But good song.
Yeah.
It's a good song.
Absolutely, it's a great album, that.
Yeah, really nice. I don't know what I was going to ask you a minute ago. I was going to ask you, every time there's like a Geordie contestant on Big Brother, do you root for them? Do you find yourself rooting for
them? Not at all. I'd only root for somebody that I thought was a... It's like this thing, isn't it? Back in the... Yeah. I'm going to stop saying back in the day. That's the last time. But do you remember on X Factor, they used to say if any contestant was a Scotsman, a Scots person, that the Scots would vote. And I thought, yeah, no matter how good, though, you know. And we had a person on our show, and he was absolutely despised by the public in general.
Yeah.
And he came second. And it, I reckon it was only because of the Scots vote.
Really?
The Scottish vote. He's thinking, oh my goodness, why?
But more and more now.
I would never do that. No, I don't even think it. You know, I think, oh great, oh good on you. No. No.
But more and more now, the public would almost vote to keep the awful people in because it's more entertaining to watch, won't they?
Occasionally. Because this weird thing they do, right? They do, Big Brother, they do this either vote to evict or vote to save. Now, if you're sort of a controversial character, you're attracting loads of people that like you, but they can't vote for you.
You know, they only
vote for somebody else to get them out. If that's difficult if there's three, four people up. But so, we lost a really good character towards the end of this series of Big Brother called Mark, a very controversial Irish lad who was very funny, in-your-face funny, and he was there for about 5 weeks and basically caused carnage. Mm. But as soon as he's up for... As soon as he's nominated for eviction, he goes. And it's such a shame, you know.
But
if he'd been a vote to save, his fans had saved him, and somebody that was maybe a little less interesting would have gone in his place. But that's how he goes, you know. But
So the episode that I had to watch, there's someone called Toya on it who was just...
Yes, Toya Washington, yeah.
Being horrible. Yeah. But then, like, when I was on that panel thing for Big Mouth, they loved her.
Yeah.
They were all going, save her, save Toya, she's great.
Yeah.
And I didn't understand. I was like, what is it about she's been going around, like... Because she was going around, and she was going, I just tell people what I think of them. I'm just honest.
Yeah.
And all this. And so she'd go up to people and kind of say really horrible things to them about what she thinks about them that weren't really true either. Like, they wouldn't have even really done much back. So if someone was nice, that's something. Yeah. So if someone was like maybe a bit rude, she'd go up to them and just be like, you know, you are the worst person I've ever met, and really rude, and it'd be really horrible to them. But if someone was nice and polite, she'd go, you're really fake and you pretend to be nice to people, but you're not. Yeah. I know that. So basically, her assumption was everyone in their heart is horrible.
Yeah.
And so no matter what, you either... So if someone lost their temper back at her and said to her, well, look, you're just going around being rude to people all the time and being a bully. And then she'd go, you showing your true colours?
Yeah.
And then that'd be it. Because then it's like, well, you can't really win against that kind of... Because you're just going, if you're... And it was like, well, what about you? You show your true colours?
Contradict myself, actually, the girl, there was a lady that won Big Brother last year called Helen, and she was infamous in the papers for, for sleeping with a famous footballer.
Congratulations.
Apparently caught her, and you know, she admitted it and whatever. Yeah. So she got a bit of notoriety, and then she got on the normal Big Brother, and she was a very controversial character. She's very much in your face, and she'd shout people down, swear a lot, quite sort of, I am what I am, I say what I said, and blah, blah, blah. And she went and won it, and she was she was the first and only winner of Big Brother ever to get booed when she came out. Oh, it was terrible, embarrassing almost.
Crazy.
But she was such a controversial character. Yeah. And a lot of people loved her, and how she survived was she randomly got this sort of passed the final, and in the first day she got like immunity from all nomination eviction right to the final, and that kept her in, so she never had to face the vote to evict, and it was only the vote to win at the end, and she won it. So there you go.
It's crazy, isn't it? Episodes like that, like the one I had to watch with, because obviously, you know, that Toya lady, there's a lot of people like that in life. She's, you know, a lot of people will relate to her.
Yeah.
You go, I just tell people what I think, I just speak my mind, and you go around assuming the worst and being really horrible to people. When I see that, I proper just go, we're fucked.
Yeah.
I mean, we're really in trouble. Because,
well, a very nice young lady won it this year, and basically she was the antithesis of that, and of some of the other housemates this year, and so the public went back and voted for the nice girl to win. So,
every now and again there's a nice one wins it. That's nice.
Yes.
That's good. I mean the first one, you know, guy Craig won, he was giving all his money to...
Craig's a great bloke, and he does a lot for charity these days, and I still sort of bump into him now and again, and he's got a career which has lasted since then. He's some sort of like on one of the channels and doing like his own building programs. He was a builder, so he'll teach people to do whatever, I believe. Yes. Anyway, but he's a nice bloke. But in the Big Brother 1, he basically slept for... It was nine. Was it 9 weeks? He slept for 8 weeks. He woke to give Nasty Nick what he thought of him, and then they probably went, Nasty Nick, and then he won the show.
Yeah, that's all you got to do. Quality, not quantity.
Yes,
do nothing.
Absolutely.
Get up. Dress someone down.
Do something good, and then.
And then people go, great, you've won. Also, he said he was going to give all his money to a young lady with Down syndrome, right?
Yes, and I believe he did, I think I was asking him the other month about how I bumped into him and said, whatever happened to that? Oh, she died, she passed away.
Oh, God.
And I don't know if she ever got the operation, but it was a really nice thought and a big emotional scene at the end. You
I think if the public don't vote for someone like that to win when they say that, you're going, what hope is there? Good on him. Is there another series coming up? I guess there's always more.
Next month, August, we've got a Celebrity Big Brother starting. That'll be on for, I don't know. I'm not like they're so precious about the date. I can't say when it is yet because they have to announce it. You know,
I guess
scheduling.
You're not allowed to say. I
know.
Who's on it?
Ryland told me a couple of people that are on it, but I'm sworn to secrecy. I get absolutely. You know,
Who would be your ideal people to go in, celebrities-wise? Who would you love to see?
Probably, we always see it, because he nearly came on about 5 years ago. It would be Boy George, who I find fascinating, and read his autobiography.
Yes.
And, of course, he was such a big hit going through the superstar going through the 80s, and his ups and downs, and his ups have been chronicled. And, you know, I follow him on Twitter, and he's a very innocent bloke, and he's really sorted his life out, and he's really sort of...
Well, you say that. I sat next to him... I sat next to him in a comedy gig and he wouldn't shut up, so you know.
He's
to learn when to stop talking to the people next to him.
There you go. I've bought the sort of the media image, so but I think he would be a great Big Brother housemate. And he was supposed to go in, so I read, about 5 years ago, but he'd done something, a crime.
Right.
And he had an ankle bracelet on or something. And of course, when you've got an ankle bracelet on, that means you're released early, aren't you? And you're sort of under, not house arrest
You
can't go and earn money on TV programmes, so he wasn't allowed to go on. And I think he's had second thoughts since, but I believe. But I'd love somebody like him to go on, because Pete Burns was on many years ago.
Yes.
And he was a great housemate. And, because I think he would tell it how it is, you know. He wouldn't take no prisoners, and that would be great to watch. But you know, sometimes Big Brother starts, as we know, Celebrity Big Brother starts, and even I go, "Who?"
Sure, yeah.
You know, never heard
someone's
of them.
Mom,
and sometimes
or
you know, or somebody that's been somebody that's been on a show like Gogglebox, whatever. I haven't watched. But the great housemates, you know. You know. Well, we've had some really good. God, we've had that Michael Madsen out of Reservoir Dogs a couple of years ago.
He was
fabulous. And
well, there was the what's the one where you had Sylvester Stallone's mum.
Yeah,
and who else? It was a rival. There was another
Bridget
lady.
Bridget Nielsen, who was his ex-wife.
Right. Yeah, because it was amazing. Someone showed me this clip, and I watched it so many times, and occasionally still watch it and show it to friends, because it's when she comes into the house and Bridget Nielsen's not expecting her. So it's here's
Jackie.
The new husband. She goes, "Oh, Jackie." But then Jackie tries to be all cool about it, but gets her own name wrong because she's looking at Bridget.
Yeah.
So she just goes, Bracky. Oh, I love it. Even thinking about it, I'd laugh so
and I
much.
Think, because she must be, I mean, I'm sure when she went in, she was about 84.
Yeah.
And that's many years ago. So she must be in her 90s now.
Bracky.
Bracky.
She's got shades on, trying to be really cool about it, and trying to be like a villain, like a super villain. Jackie.
But I remember at the rap party, she was there with her husband, and her husband was like a small... He just looked like something like an old mafia don, and he had a trilby on, big fedora or whatever, brown suit on. And she was sat in a chair. And, you know, you have lots of runners in TV and people, you know, and invariably young people. And there was a ton of young people around her.
Really?
All getting autographs, getting their photographs taken. Yeah, with her. She was such a big hit. And she just lapped it up. She was fantastic.
Was she? Yeah. Oh, Bracky. That's yeah. my favourite Big Brother moment. Yeah. Watch that. I mean, if just go on YouTube now and watch that, because I'd recommend it.
Yeah.
Trying to think who I would like. You mentioned Ant and Dec earlier, just in passing, but I would like to see one of them. Even one of them.
Separated.
Yeah, just one of them on Big Brother, Celebrity Big Brother, and see how they
I don't know, this is my opinion, but I think a lot of Big Brother people, celebrities that go on Big Brother, they need to earn a bit of money, and they get well paid for it. I'm led to believe they get well paid for it.
Yeah.
And so they've got to be a little bit fair down. They've got to have maybe a tax bill to pay, or a maintenance bill
get
to pay.
Get them while you can. Kevin Bacon at the minute, surely. Surely you could get Kevin Bacon.
Is he down at Hill?
Clearly done something wrong. He's doing so many adverts and stuff. There's clearly something that's going on with Kevin Bacon. Well, what he did, he invested in something. So someone invested all of his money in something. And he lost
maybe so much money. Oh, James, that would be amazing.
It'd be great to get Kevin Bacon on it.
He's like one of these blokes. So he must be like mid-50s and he looks like 25, doesn't he? You know, he's very boyish, you know.
Here's a question for you. Would you do it? If they said, look... We're not letting you do the narration for the next one. You're not allowed to do it. We're getting Peter Dixon.
Oh, God.
And they said, we'll get you back on it next season. Next series, you can do the narration again.
Only if you do this.
But you have to be in the house.
I'd have to, wouldn't I? And then you'd be thinking, oh, my God, what, you know, because we all like, I've got to an age now where I know what my faults are, and you just think, oh my God, what if I lost my temper?
Yeah.
What if I pick my nose? I don't pick my nose.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What if you did something and then people, you know, and then I know everybody works on Big Brother. There's, well, a lot of people, and they'd be seeing you go at the toilet, whatever. You see the, and you go, oh, Marcus, and they'd never look at me the same again.
Yeah.
And you'd be walking down the street and they'd go, oh, you know.
Yeah.
You said that rude word, and it was that to that old lady.
But
was,
you'd be like, you know, hey, at least I won the wanking competition.
Yeah.
You know, you can say whatever you like, but I won that competition fair and square.
Yeah, absolutely. You'll never take that away from me.
Yeah. Beat Dave Lamb.
Big wanger.
Obviously, Dave Lamb. They could get...
Dave Lamb of...
Come Dine With Me.
Yeah, he's brilliant, isn't he? He's a really, really good
Would you rather, if you were on Big Brother, would you rather Peter Dixon or Dave Lamb was the narrator?
Well, I know Peter, but I don't know David, but I'm a fan of both their works.
Yeah.
I've been diplomatic. Probably Dave Lamb's sort of style would probably suit the show more.
Yeah.
Maybe.
He would be very sarcastic.
Yeah, he sounds a bit like... I sometimes used to... When I used to hear them independently, but not on Envision, rather, I'd sort of think that Dave Lamb sounded a bit like Harry Hill. Because I used to love the...
Yeah.
What was Harry Hill's programme called?
TV Burp?
TV Burp.
Yeah,
I used to love that. In fact, one of the highlights of my career was being on TV Burp.
Oh.
A thing I did on Big Brother. I think... Yeah. Dean Bowers was kicking a condom round the Celebrity Big Brother garden.
Sounds about right.
And it was Big Brother, and it was was it something story of the week?
Oh,
And I was that story of the week.
Yeah, yeah.
Dear one, seven. Dean Bowers is kicking a condom round the, filled with whatever. You know how it goes.
That is a story.
And
though,
so I was so thrilled. I could have died and gone to heaven.
Yeah, that's awesome. that's great. I was gonna ask you another thing. Oh, yeah. Okay, here we go. The narrator, either Dave Lamb, Peter Dixon, or, for this guy into the mix, David Attenborough. He'd be pretty good.
Yeah.
Would make you sound like animals.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. That'd be good.
I would like it if they had him on rotation, maybe.
Yeah, rotation.
And a thing where, like...
Yeah, do you know what? I'm actually... Why I pause it is I'm actually thinking about it, thinking, oh, who would I really like?
You know that you would win, though, as well. You would definitely win.
I would win my job back.
No, you would win...
Oh, sure.
You would win Celebrity Big Brother. Easily, if you were on it, because...
Yeah, it might be unfair, because a lot of the fans are sure...
Yeah.
But what if I didn't? What if I didn't? What if I'd really I really sort of shored myself up and I could never.
But that'd be great.
You said you were going to give you the job back, Marcus, but no.
No, because it'd be great that you had the job back, because you could watch the other series and have you narrating it, but really bitter.
Yeah.
I would like that if you're like, you know, they're doing a task and say, like, to be honest, I had a much harder task when I did it. And, you know, people had to go at me for losing the housemates our food that week.
Yeah.
But I could have done this one with my eyes closed.
Yeah.
And it's a lot easier now than when I was in the house.
Well, you know, I went in the house once. It was the last series on Channel 4.
Yeah.
And I got asked to go in. They were doing this whole week task of ignore the obvious. So they'd get brass bands in and the housemates that completely ignore it. Then sort of someone's granddad came in dressed as Father Christmas, who we hadn't seen for 18 years or something. Well. And he had to ignore this and there was like, et cetera, et cetera. Japanese photographer, tourists coming through taking photographs of them, had to ignore it. And then I went in. And I narrated the house life, so it was the, you know, so-and-so doing whatever. I got into bed with them. They were trying to embarrass me by talking about sadomasochism and whatever. It's 6:52 p.m. Some of the housemates are talking about sadomasochism and trying to embarrass me, but it's not work. Anyway, and then basically what happened was there was a really nice lad called John James who was going out with Josie Gibson in the show. Right. They had a little love affair and Josie went on to win the show and she's lovely. But he passed me a Jaffa cake, whatever. And I said a line. You know, it was out of context and it tickled the sort of the fans and us. 6:52 p.m. John James is passing around the Jaffa cakes, whatever, and it's oh my god, Marcus is going to get a Jaffa cake out of
here. Finally, but anyway, way to your heart,
that was fantastic. I was in there for about an hour and a half, and I had great fun. And then the end of show is a highlight show. They showed about 3 minutes of it.
Jaffa cake's your favourite?
I like a Jaffa cake.
You love a Jaffa cake?
Yeah.
Oh, nice. I mean, what about the other flavours, though?
Do you know Jaffa Cakes? I don't think Jaffa Cake is a brand, is it? It's actually, you can go into any supermarket and get their version of a Jaffa Cake. It's not...
Oh, yeah.
But Jaffa must be, because isn't that an Israeli orange?
Yeah, I don't really
now
know.
Now we're getting off... we're going tangent now, aren't we? Tangent, man.
That's allowed, though, isn't it? Yeah, I'm not sure if they just call them Jaffa Cakes, don't they, on the packet when they're copying
them. Like a custard cream, you know.
Yeah, they just call it. Oh, obviously, everyone knows about legally... what Jaffa Cakes had to prove that it was a cake and not a biscuit.
Tax
stuff.
Was it really?
Apparently tax is different on cakes than it is a biscuit. It's more favourable.
And it was a cake and not a biscuit.
Yeah, they proved it was a cake. I think that how you prove it is if it dries out, if you just leave it.
Who made that rule up?
So it just dries out. So one of them,
of it as a biscuit though, don't you?
It is really. I mean, it's just a very shallow cake.
Yeah. We've talked about everything today, haven't we? You know.
Well, that's
eclectic. Yeah. Second time I've used that word.
Let's have another song from your iPod. We haven't got long left, actually. We'll play another song because I need the mother of all pisses. So we're going to play this song, and then I can go to the toilet.
All right.
And then what song are you going to pick?
It's going to be a Pixies because I love the Pixies.
Oh yeah. You
mentioned this is live. This is one of my favourites, and it's called Debaser.
Lovely. Debaser live, the Pixies. The toilet that I went to, because I had to be quick, it was the ladies' toilet on this floor. Normally empty. Not today. Had to negotiate with a lady going in there at the same time as me, explain what was happening, and then her basically explained to me that I was being overly considerate about it and that it was fine. But she I think I made myself more suspicious. By being like,
it's like a Larry David sketch, this, isn't it?
I'm playing. It's Debaser by the Pixies. It's not a very long song, and I was currently going downstairs to where the gents are because I don't know the code for the doors, so I have to just nip in here. But I'll wait for you to come out. It's okay. She was like, no, come in the toilet. It's fine, and it was all right. But yeah, I mean, and then on my way out, there was a lady going in. So it looked like I'd just gone in with the lady I was originally with, and now she's going to get raised eyebrows in the office for the rest of the week. I've ruined her life. Thank you very much, Marcus, for coming in this week.
I've loved it. It's gone so quickly, so that means I've been having fun.
Flown by. What are you up to tonight? You got anything nice planned?
Well, I'm taking my son and I. We're going to go down to Brick Lane and then we're going to look for a really good curry.
Great. Hey, we've been talking about so much music. Go to Rough Trade. That's down Brick Lane.
Yeah, and we are going to go. We go there every time and buy a couple of LPs. That's what we'll do. Yeah.
Oh, awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Marcus. Marcus thank Bentley. You. Everyone, if this is a full studio, they'd all be applauding you now.
Can I play one more song?
You can play one more song.
Oh, this is a very famous song. I just thought because it was once a part of a Big Brother promo, and it's a very, very famous song. AC/DC, Back in Black.
Lovely stuff.
James Acaster on FUBAR Radio.